Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. How are you all today? Okay. So let's see. On my left, any of you are new here today? Okay, can. So KS has brought some goodies. So we'll pass down the goodies. But wait, hang on. The goodies, how is it? Is it individually packed?
No.
So you have to be careful, huh? Because carpet, so one mouth put inside. Just use your hand. Take yourself. You've got to help to tear up. While stock lasts. So how about the right? Anybody who is new? So, sometimes I give special allowance, but only for 1 week. So, let me see. So, we have someone... can tell us your name? Ask your name and how you got to know about this group.
My name is Ming Hun. I came with my sister and brother-in-law.
Ming Hun, and who is your sister and brother-in-law?
My sister is Kip Yong.
Yes.
Brother-in-law.
Yes. Welcome, welcome. Okay, let's see who else is here for the first time. I think the rest are all season parking holder. So while the goodies is being passed down, so do take care when you are taking it, if possible, one mouth put inside. We still want to be able to use the auditorium for months or years to come. So welcome to SGC. So apologies earlier. Arrive, I think close to 1. We started okay lah. We started about 1:05 or so. Yeah, because in the morning we had the book study group on the book ITBW. And then when we finished, we went for lunch nearby in Serangoon, Amokyo area. But then I found that I was really drenched, my t-shirt. So swing back to get my t-shirt. So, this is the first noble truth. First noble truth. Have you all experienced the first noble truth before? Say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So, sometimes it's good to fall sick. Yeah. I've said this many times. I'll say it again. For myself, when I am not feeling well, I'm very diligent. Because I'm... For myself, when I fall sick, it becomes I have the it becomes very visceral to me, yeah, very apparent to me, the mortality of our life. Of course, some of you who have known me for a while will know a small little thing will die already. So, but it's good to make use of this, yeah, to practice also. It's been a week since last Monday. Last week after SGC, I started having a bit of headache, and then didn't quite go away. Now I fully comprehend the notion that you should not keep medicine for too long. Yeah. Because by Monday or Tuesday, I wanted to take some Panadol. Then I saw one whole plastic bag of Panadol of different shapes and sizes. And I have no idea which one is the one that is valid. Just took two pop. Yeah, after a few hours of resting, it didn't help. Yeah, it actually got worsened. Then I found one. Then some students brought some things over, and one of them was the Panadol, and that helped. Yeah, because it's a fresh batch. But falling sick is a matter of conditions. When. Suffering because of it is optional. Yeah, I like how some Buddhist teachers have summarized the teaching in this way. Yeah, some say suffering is inevitable, or rather pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Yeah. I would not go so far as to say that pain is inevitable. Pain is conditional, but so is suffering. Yeah. So, why do we say that? Because if there are no conditions, you will not have pain also. Yeah. But you must know that as long as you have a body, you can experience pain from it. Yeah. You can experience pain from it. When we meditate and you experience a bit of discomfort, we attribute the discomfort to meditation. We never attribute the discomfort to the body. Yeah, we never. But if you really think about it, when you meditate, it's not always uncomfortable. Yeah. So it's conditional. And the body is part of that condition. The body don't always give us pain also. Yeah? The body can give us pleasure as well. Throughout our life, we spend quite a bit of our time pursuing pleasure. Yeah, pursuing pleasure. Nothing that wrong for you to pursue pleasure. But in our pursuit for that, sometimes we may forget that the body don't just give us pleasure. Sometimes it doesn't give us pain, doesn't give us pleasure. When that happens, usually we feel boredom. Yeah. The absence of pain and pleasure. We are oblivious of it, but we respond with boredom. Do you ever get bored when you are in pain? No. Do you ever get bored when you are experiencing pleasure? Like you go for a meal, and then, then halfway through, I am so bored. Why, what happened? Is the food not nice? No, it's very nice. Then why are you bored? Yeah, that's why I'm bored, ma. It's so tasty, I'm so bored. or you go for a movie, and then halfway through you're like, your friend's like, hey, why? So boring. No, it's very exciting. That's why I'm bored. Yeah. We are never bored when it's good. Ask any NS man earlier in the car, we were talking about NS.
Not yet.
Huh?
Not yet.
August? What?
I thought you
were referring to me. Oh, we were talking about NS. We're not talking about you. Yeah. Oh, but you are going in August?
Yeah, August 16th.
How old are you? How come you haven't go NS yet?
I'm 20 only.
Huh?
I'm 20 only.
20? Oh, okay. August, Wow. So long ago. So ask any NS man, at some point in NS, if you ask NS, those who have gone through NS, they will say some part of NS is boring. It is when you rush to wait. Rush and then sit down there and wait. Yeah, but when you are going through SOC, when you are going through tough times, you are never bored. So boredom comes when you have pain, we have no pain or pleasure. Yeah, but that's the nature of this body. I sometimes joke about how when you have toothache, have you had toothache before?
Yes.
Toothache is rarer than headache. Yeah. Not everybody have toothache before. I can't tell whether I have toothache before, actually. Yeah. I think if we can even compare the amount of pain, then most people will say, yours is nothing, and that's not toothache. Yeah. As much as I'm not really oral hygiene, like, meticulous about it. So the joke is, if you have teeth, then you can potentially have toothache. If you have a head, you can potentially have headache. So if you don't want to have toothache, you take out your teeth. If you don't have headache, take out your head. But the principle itself is not wrong, you know. Yeah, that this body itself can give you these three broad kinds of feelings, sensation, painful, pleasant, neither painful nor pleasant sensation. And this is the nature of this body. So, but we question it when we have pain. We get bored when we don't have pain or pleasure. But we never question when we are having pleasure. Yeah, when things are going well, we never question, how come? A student in another class, he asked me, Shifu, in the past 2 years, I've been having one physical ailment after another. Can you explain to me why? Is this due to karma? So I said, this is like the 2008 Lehman Brothers crisis, you know. All the uncle auntie who dabble in, you know, all the bonds and shares and stocks. Oh, they tell the press, oh, we don't know what happened. How come it's like that? No one explained to me. So I mean, it's quite sad. But then I asked people, when they were having a good time and they were earning a lot of money, yeah, when the brokers informed them that they have earned 10% here, they have earned a few hundred thousand there, Do they tell the broker, hey, why you give me $100,000? Huh? Why should I be? They never say that. So I told that student, in the same way, I asked him, so before these 2 years, how was your health? And then he thought about it, and he answered very truthfully. He said, as a matter of fact, since young, until 2 years ago, his health has been very good. Yeah, so I asked him, so all these years, did you not question how come you have good health? This is the way we are. When we have good health, we don't question it. When we have bad health, oh, how come I fall sick? Yeah, so good to fall sick once in a while, huh? Reminder of our this the nature of this body. But I digress. My digression is usually 20 minutes longer. So this is so what is today's topic? Today's topic is on another set of practices that y'all can do. Giving and offering. Is it? Is it? Giving and offering. Do y'all know what is the topic? Some of you don't know. Just come along. Yeah. Giving and offering. What is today's date? 24th of June. Oh, looks quite sharp, huh? Okay. So, giving and offerings. 2 weeks ago, we went through taking refuge. The three refuges. Then last week we went through one of the practice, which is dedication of merits. And we went through different angles of it. What is the dedication? We also went through one specific set of the verses. Today we're going to go through another practice. So this series is about sort of tying in some of the things we have actually gone through before, we have learned. And for those who are newer, to sort of give ourselves a bit of a kind of a framework. Yeah, that as a Buddhist, what are the things we can and perhaps should do? Yeah, not just fill up the form and then count it out. Yeah. So one of the most fundamental practices is the practice of giving and doing offerings. Yeah. There are two terms that is linked to this. So, one is dana, and one is raga. Is it raga? So, dana is giving. Raga is generosity. Yeah. But the two is often found together. Yeah, in the teachings, the two are found together. Because giving is the practice of generosity. So, in Chinese, we call it 布施. Giving is Shi. Offerings is slightly different. Offerings is gong yang. So, what is the difference? Both are fundamentally of the same nature, the act of giving. So, why do we have two different terms for it? So, Sometimes the two are synonymous, sometimes they are slightly different. Usually we use the term offering or gongyang when we deem the recipient to be someone who is worthy. Yeah? And as a form of, like, you could call it respect, then we say you do an offering. Then in terms of giving, doesn't mean that the other person is not worthy of respect, but usually it is seen more as a form of assistance or aid to the recipient. So I'm going to start off with the standard set, the three kinds of offering or the three kinds of giving that is in the Buddhist teaching. And then later on we'll go through a specific set of practices that is linked to it. Okay? So the first one, so the three are basically what we call Fa Bu Shi, then Cai Bu Shi, and then Wei Shi. I think this is how it's written. Bu Wei the Wei. Is it correct? So in English, this is Dharma. And then I'm going to just write down wealth first, and then I'll explain, okay? And then fearlessness. Traditionally, in the Theravadan tradition, that's usually only mention of the first two. In the Mahayana tradition, then there's mention of the third. But it doesn't mean that the third is not taught at all in the Theravadan tradition. Yeah, it's usually not so highlighted as one of the giving. Yeah. So the first one, the giving of Dharma, here I put it as number one because in the teachings the Buddha said of all gifts the gift of Dharma is supreme. Then secondly you have the giving of wealth. In a way we can put fearlessness as number two, but wealth is in terms of material things. Don't think that, wow, Sifu, this monk, very tricky. Suddenly throw in this Cai Bu Shi. No. This is inside the text. But here, Cai is not just about money. It's all kinds of material giving. So material giving can be any of the four requisites. Yi, Shi, Zu, Yao. Giving of robes or clothing in a case. Don't think of robes as something so like, wow, unique or special or like that. Robes is basically just clothing. In ancient times, lay people also wear robes. It's just that the design is slightly different. The word robes actually don't denote any religious connotation to it. Ancient Greece, they wear robes also. Indians, until today, the traditional attire, the sari, is basically that one piece. Of course, it has evolved. So, yi shi, so food, then zhu, your lodging, and lastly, your medicine. Medicine to upkeep the body. So, cai is basically anything to upkeep the body. Material things. But giving of material things, what we have listed of the four, these are more about essentials. yeah, essentials. So giving of material things, so this is more about material things. Today when you all give things to people, do you all only give essential things? Yeah? Do you only give essential things? Of course, not just essential things. But did the Buddha say that Buddhists can only give essential things? What is essential? Did the Buddha say can only buy clothes? Yeah, how about presents? How about cosmetic? Can buy or not? Then you all may think, oh yeah, Sifu, huh? So misogynistic, yeah? So male chauvinist, yeah? Again, anti-woman. No. In fact, I'm trying to highlight, yeah, that sometimes we have a wrong idea about Buddhism. The Buddha, some of you will be familiar, in the Sigalobada Sutta, this morning in the ITBW, we went through the listing. In the relation between husbands and wife, yeah, the Buddha highlighted the duties of the husband. How many of you are married? Raise your hand. How about those who are patoying? Oh, only one guy patoying. So, the Buddha highlighted that the duty of a husband is to buy gifts for the wife, one of them, you know? Yeah. So it includes things that we would usually think of as non-necessities. Yeah. But the Buddha recognized that for a healthy marriage or relationship, yeah, they should buy gifts for each other. So, this second category, it can actually extend beyond the basic necessities. Yeah, the four requisites is only for monastics, mainly. Third one, 无畏施, fearlessness. Fearlessness is the passive form. There's the active and passive form. Yeah. Actively to give protection, and then passively not to harm others. Yeah. So earlier on when we observe panatipata viramani sikapadam samadhiyami, yeah, when you abstain from harming, you are actually giving others fearlessness. Yeah. The practice of the precepts give others fearlessness. Others don't have to worry when they are with you. Yeah. Imagine if your friend, not your friend, let's say your kids' friends. Yeah. Every time your kids' friends, your kids' classmates come to your house, then something go missing. This week, yeah, after lunch, then you go back, then you wash. Eh, how come one fork is missing? Next week, you come again to do homework, then after when you come back, all the toilet roll used up. Not big things lah, not TV. Huh? Then another time when they come, then spoon missing. Yeah, sounds quite funny. Huh? As ridiculous as it may seem, if it happens, how would you feel? If it becomes consistent, you cannot help it but start to wonder. You may ask your son, hey, your classmate, what's wrong with your classmate? That just as an example, not that you have such classmates. Yeah. Then the next time when your kid bring the classmates over, yeah, you may think twice. Yeah. And again, it's not that one fork, one spoon is a big deal. Yeah? Come and think about it. Would you be okay if your friend come over and then will it make a difference if your friend say, hey, can I have this fork? Or if your friend don't tell you, maybe it's not your kid's friends. What if it's your friend? Right? Come, all of us, sit up straight. Sit up straight. After lunch, tired. By practicing the precepts, we give people peace of mind. Peace of mind. So that is the third one. In terms of the first one, we come back again. Giving of Dharma. It can be of a few forms as well. One very direct way that you all can share Dharma. Do you all share Dharma with other people? Some of you do, right? You catch up with your friends, have lunch, then you tell them, come, let me tell you about Lotus Sutra. Come, let me tell you about Amitabha Sutra. That's going to be quite a long lunch. We share what you can share. But sometimes in social settings, sometimes if you share too many times, sometimes your friend may not go for lunch with you anymore. They think that you're a part-time preacher. You're a part-time dharmacharya. So another way to share, especially for some of us, sometimes you may attend Dharma talks, Dharma classes, or SGC. You may feel very inspired. But then I have students who come to me and tell me, Sifu, I want to share, but I don't know how to start that. I don't know how to tell them. How to tell them. So if you are not ready to share, sometimes it's because they say, I don't have to share. Why? If I share, then they ask me more questions. I cannot answer how. So one easy way, you share with them the YouTube recording. You can go to our YouTube channel and just share the link. But you don't have to share only SGC. There are many other venerables who have put up their classes and talks online. But one thing I ask of you all, share whatever you have watched yourself. Okay? Don't just anyhow, you see the title seems Buddhist, then you see the thumbnail looks like a Buddhist talk, then you just share. Because there are a lot of random clips up there that starts off like as though it's Dharma, but later on it turned out not to be Dharma. So be careful with what you share also. So another way to share is, share what you have learned directly. But students have told me that when they share in this way, sometimes the other party is maybe not so receptive. So another way to share is to share with them how the teaching has helped you. Thus, that can help them have an appreciation of how it may be applicable to them. Instead of just trying to, remember word for word what Shifu has said. Because you must know that as much as that verse, that line that Shifu said maybe made a lot of sense to you, you must know that there are conditions for it to make sense to you, which your friend, your family, your neighbor, your neighbor's dog may not have the suitable conditions. So when you share that same line, Shifu, I told them exactly what you told us. How come they don't seem to get it? Because they have not been attending so religiously, they have not gone through the same thing you have gone through. So instead of just telling them word for word what I told you, good to share with them how the teaching has helped you. So you can share YouTube. You can share your own experience of the Dharma. You can also share books. Yeah. Again, don't share books. Don't just go and attend a talk, then they give free books, then you just take and then just pass to people. Yeah. There are a lot of free distribution. Make sure you read through themselves before you share. Or unless you know for a fact the content, then you share. Yeah. Again, because there are a lot of books that may not be that legit. So, of course, you can also share Dharma directly. Yeah. Like if you feel up to it, you can let me know. Then one of the weeks, I will take a break and then we invite you to give a Dharma talk. But the highest way to give teaching, one of the way, but is I consider it the highest because it's actually toughest, is to not just talk about it, but to do it. Yeah. Without telling people, without explicitly speaking Dharma, but to live Dharma. Yeah. In the Dharman Sutra, it highlights this, that this is what is meant by sharing the Dharma. In her Wei Ren Yuan Shuo, we tend to think, oh, speak the Dharma means literally just use your mouth and speak. That is also speaking the Dharma, but to live your life according to the Dharma. Yeah. Because when you do that, then people see for themselves the impact on you. So this is an extension of your experience. Yeah. So live by it. I don't know whether it's the app or is it my handwriting or maybe it's the medication. But do you all find that my handwriting is really bad today? So this is for Dharma. Material, we go further into it. Material, it can be internal, it can be external, it can be neither internal nor external, or a combination. So we start with external first. Yeah. So external is giving of material things, which you have gone through a bit, of material things. But how about internal? So internal would be your body. Yeah. So students have asked me, oh, so Sifu, is it okay to do organ donation? And by organ donation, most people are asking about donating of organs after dying. Yeah. And there are many ways about it. A lot of Buddhists are concerned about this practice because if you do this practice, usually, from what I know, they need to perform the extraction within a few hours or something, right? Yeah, cannot be too long. Yeah, cannot wait for you to nian wang sen zhou, you know, for several days. Yeah, wait until wang sen, the body also wang sen already. So there's the fear that if you do it too quickly, then the person may not be in an ideal state for rebirth. Yeah. But why would there be a contention then? The contention is then it seems quite selfish. Oh. But at the same time, you'll be jeopardizing your own practice. And how? So my take on this is this. Before you talk about internal, the bodily giving, ask yourself, how many of you have at least given $1 before? Raise your hand. All of you can raise your hand. Come on. Well, one time, all of you can participate. Okay, raise your hand. Very good. Then let's increase it. $10, at least $10. I think most of you can also. Lah. If you have not, later go down BL, then kaki lai. Don't think that I'm trying to hint to you. Go down BL, not give to me. But as we increase, then maybe the number of hands would go down. Yeah, like let's just jump straight to 1,000 in your whole life. Maybe 1,000 in your whole life, accumulated, aggregate, yeah, still possible. How about 10,000? 10,000? 20,000? And then if you think about it, right, it's so interesting, you know. Like, if your take-home salary is about 25K to 50K a year, and if you have been working for 10 over years, it means you have earned an average of 200 over 1,000 plus. And yet, 10,000, if you add up your whole life of giving, potentially it's less than 10,000. Then, actually, you know, amount you spend on yourself, on your family versus giving is actually very minuscule. But I'm not here to shame anybody, okay? No. There's another point to this, which is the Buddha never stipulate a percentage for us. So there's no crime and shame as to how much you give. Yeah? You give $1, you're still giving. You give $10, you're still giving. No problem. You give 100,000, so what? You're still giving. Yeah? The mind mentality, the manner, the attitude of giving is sometimes even more important than the amount you give. There was I think he was a prince. He was doubtful about the benefits of giving. Yeah, that means the fruit of giving. But after some consultation with the Buddha, he was somewhat convinced that, okay, there's some merit in giving. So he asked his servant to help him go and do giving. Even though he became convinced, he was not keen to use his own effort to go and do it. So he asked his servant. And his servant is a disciple of the Buddha and is very faithful. And so with the master's money, she very joyously gave. So she didn't spend a single cent. Yes, she put in an effort, but it's her work anyway. But she did it so joyously. When the two of them passed away, they were reborn in heavenly realm. But the rebirth that the servant received is actually higher than the master who paid for the giving. So the saying is a thought that counts. Actually, it's not just a saying. As far as karma is concerned, the mental effort is very crucial. And the point in relation to organ transplant or donation is this. Just as when the Buddha said giving, he don't say that you must sell your whole house and give away. Yeah. Likewise, when it comes to bodily giving, even if you don't give your eye away, don't give your heart away, it's not a crime. Yeah? What you're able or feel comfortable to give is up to different individuals at different stages. Give what you're ready to give. Once in a while, challenge yourself a bit. But don't feel conflicted just because you are not ready to donate your eye. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. If you are ready, then go ahead. Yeah. Don't second guess yourself. Okay.
Wait. You haven't answered the question.
What question?
The question is whether to give, is it okay? You know what they say that, you know, the Buddhists believe that you're not supposed to give after being born or what. And I heard about this when someone told me about giving. And I think that you know, for me, that I just give. But then sometimes some tell me that, you know, when you give already, when you're reborn, you don't have anything. So how do you give? So my question to you is the same. What will you say? What will you think?
What will I think? For my body or other people's body?
What is your concept? I mean, what is your thinking?
Oh, my own thinking. First and foremost, I donate blood. And I encourage people to donate blood where they can. Yeah. To begin with. If you're not even ready to donate blood, you're not even ready to give to bear with. Actually, nowadays it's virtually painless, no? When I first started donating blood, they don't give you the jab before they put in the needle. Now they give you one small jab and then whoop. Then, and that's the anesthetic, yeah, the local one. Then, so when the actual one kept going, you don't feel anything. Yeah, I was so surprised, going already, Yeah, long time ago, they don't do that. So the first one, they go in, can feel the thing. Yeah, barring, there are those who are anemic. Yeah, the blood, low blood, then kaki bo kao lao, then, you know, walking there already, giddy. But don't worry. Don't worry about you being anemic. Let the doctors worry about it. They will screen you. Don't worry. If you are not enough, they will tell you. Yeah. But you must know yourself. If you know that you are anemic, then as a matter of health, you should consider, is there something you can do to make yourself healthier? Even if you don't want to give blood, you know, anemic can be dangerous sometimes, you know, at the wrong or right time. Yeah. Losing consciousness at the wrong time can be fatal. Yeah, drive halfway. So barring that, if you cannot even bring yourself to donate blood, then why worry about organ transplant and all those things? But I know what you're trying to ask me. You're just trying to ask me, Sifu, can donate or not? When cannot donate? Yeah. It's just like you ask me, can donate my HDB flat or not? Can donate. Where, as to where your children stay, that's for you to solve. As long as you can solve it, I have no problem. Or for that matter, landed. You know, you want to donate, donate home. Yeah. So, there's nothing stopping anyone from donating it. Yeah.
There's a belief that, you know, that if you donate, I mean, if you do that, you do not have a
problem. You see, the reason why most teachers give very vague answers is because in just this room alone, all your practices is at different levels. Can I just give one blanket statement, not just about organ transplant or what? Can I just say, give you all one singular practice? All of you from today onwards must meditate 2 hours a day. Can or not? Next week, nobody come already. Right? But there are some of you who meditate more than 2 hours. There are some of you who, until today, meditated 2 hours in your whole life. You know what I mean? So, when it comes to meditation, there's no immediate sort of repercussion whether you meditate 1 or 2 hours. No immediate. Actually, there is. If you don't meditate, then harder for you to manage your emotions. So that is immediate. But most people don't see it as being so drastic. It's like car crash versus airplane crash. Yeah, statistically, ethylene pressures are lower, but looks very drastic. But actually, it's just the same one. Die or die. Both sides also die, ma. Yeah, in fact, car crashes, chance of fatality is sometimes lower than airplane crash. So, but the point here is this. So, because of the disparity, no masters can say, give you a blanket, can donate or cannot donate. It depends on your state law. Yeah. They cannot simply say, oh, universally, can or cannot. So, to err on the safe side, most of those who subscribe to this teaching would say, better play it safe. Because at least if they say that, then if you really anything, you cannot go and look for them. But this is based on one principle teaching, which is that there's an intermediate stage. In most, I say most, most Theravadan tradition, then there's no concept of an intermediate state. Yeah. I say Theravadan, but if you look at the Pali Canon, there's at least two sutta that seem to indicate that there's an intermediate state. There's one sutta where the Buddha described how third stage enlightened one, after dying, if they have not managed to attain arahanthood, will be reborn in the pure abode. But when they get reborn in the pure abode, they can attain arahanthood at different stages. One of the stages being that I think is before landing, they attain. Then there are those who, once they land, they attain. So that seemed to point to that in between dying and being reborn, there's something that happened in between. But that itself is insufficient to use as a principle to apply for all. Because one could argue that, oh, that's a third stage enlightened one. But still, that's a valid argument to say that it means that still there are conditions where then there's something intermediate. Further, there are other texts where it says a cultivator, after dying, is to be reborn in one of heavenly realms. But while en route, then saw some objects of desire, of lust, and then drop from that state, and then immediately get reborn in a lower state. So then that seems to indicate an intermediate stage also. The trouble is, the Buddha's teaching for 45 years focus not on the future life, not on the past life, not on the intermediate stage, but on the present life. And in fact, not just the present life, but the present moment. Because that's the only moment we have. That's the only moment you have. The question to me that is more important is how you live your present moment. How you practice your present moment. Because after you die, yeah, you can say that you don't want to donate law. But what if after you die, someone chop you up? Amitabha, not that I'm cursing you all. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So to me, you have to ask yourself, in the event if your rebirth is not instantaneous, there are two ways to have instantaneous rebirth that is confirmed. Rebirth in the heavenly realm. Yeah, upon death, there are some descriptions about heavenly beings receiving you, and your rebirth is spontaneous because the rebirth in those heavenly realms are manifest. They are huasen. So there's no need to wait for other conditions. Yeah, so if you want to assure yourself of spontaneous rebirth, do a lot of good. Yeah, every week come and wash toilet in the Buddhist library. go and volunteer here, volunteer there. Do a lot of good. Wow. Anytime there's an evil thought, dispel it. Then, as you approach your final moment, or you can practice Pure Land practice, but not so easy also a Pure Land practice. Or, easier way, do a lot of evil. I say easy, never say painless. I never say it's good, I only say it's easy. So, you want to have a good rebirth, or you want to have easy rebirth? Easy rebirth, you just do a lot of evil, so evil that you're confirmed going to hell. Then, after dying, you don't have to worry about what they do to your body. Immediately, before you're going to die, you already, oh, jialat, cham jialat, cham jialat. Yeah. The trouble is for most people, 我们高不成低不就. Yeah, we're not good enough to have spontaneous rebirth up or down. Yeah, so, then it depends on your habitual tendency. That's why meditation is so important. Because sometimes when you sit, that is very painful, right? I don't think it's useless. If you can bear with that, then heng heng shui shui, maybe you pass away, then they check your form. Then maybe when you are filling up the form, you tick the wrong one. Yeah? Then you tick the, I agree to not resist the donation. Then they start putting in the jab and cut. If you have been meditating, then when they cut, then you cut. Feeling. Breaking of ribs. Oh, but if you don't feel comfortable, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay. I don't say that. Don't. Some Buddhists are very funny. They feel that they want to donate, then they shame everybody for not donating. I mean, if you don't want to donate, don't donate. Lor. There are some people sell their house, then should they go around shaming other people? Don't have to, ma. Give what you can give, ma. Oh? Yeah, so then fearlessness, we have gone through. Oh? So then, besides these three categories, tomorrow, tonight when you go back, day to day, besides towards those objects like Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and so on and so forth, what else, in what other ways can we express giving? Cai Bu Shi, there's one more, which is giving of our time. Being present with our loved ones. Now, it may seem ironic, Sifu, isn't that like a form of attachment? Well, if you're going to be a lay person, then you all should do your duty. Right? The Buddha didn't say that it's wrong for lay people to attend to their loved ones. In fact, even for monastics, the Buddha gave exceptions for us to take care of our parents. Do you all know that? Usually Chinese tradition, we think, wow, 出家了, 六亲不认, father, mother, fall sick, 阿宅啊, 哦,三福, 施主请回吧, boy, 我破杯了, 阿弥陀佛, 我会帮你念往生咒的, no, in our monastic code, if our parents fall sick, we are allowed to go back and visit them and take care of them. If there's no one to take care of them and they are not able to take care of themselves, we can take leave from the Sangha to go there to take care of them and provide them with the four requisites. 衣食住药. Yeah, but you must know, clothing, minimum clothing, not fancy, what kind of brand are there? Mango la, Banana Republic. What other brands are there now? Huh? CK, Calvin Klein. Armani la, Longchamp bag. I always talk about Longchamp. No. Yeah, we can provide them with minimal subsistence support, yeah, medicine, clothing, yeah. No, this doesn't cover annual trips, holiday to Osaka, Osaka, no. Yeah. So, the whole idea that being a Buddhist, we cannot, you know, extend love and care to our loved one, that is actually not what the Buddha taught. Yeah. Even for monks, we are allowed to go and take care of our parents, and of course for lay people, you all should, isn't it? Yeah. Since I came back in 2006, one of the first things I highlighted to the youth back then was spend time with your parents. Yeah, spend time with your parents. I see so many parents work so hard their whole youth while they are bringing out their kids. And then hoping that their kids grow up to be successful. If they are not successful, they are sad. If they are successful, they are also sad. Why? Because if they are not successful, then their children, they worry that their children will have a hard time. But if their children are too successful, then they have no time for them. Their children have no time for them. Yeah, I see that in my own sister. Half the time in the air, flying regional, going to headquarters in Germany. In fact, not just her, she and her husband take time flying. Sometimes they meet at the airport. One coming in, one going out. Then transfer the kid. Really. Yeah, transfer kid over. And come back and then take over the kid. Not that they are separated, they are happily married. But it's just that they are so busy, you know. Yeah, so I've been sharing with youth. But it's not just for youth. Yeah? Not just for youth. Give your time. Some students tell me, Sifu, I try to talk to my parents, but they don't listen to me. So I have been thinking about this. And one day I sort of have an inspiration. Because I wonder, how come people have difficulty talking to their parents? How come their parents don't listen to them? How come? Part of the reason is because when someone see you in diapers before, they can't possibly take you seriously. As my uncle put it, aiya, so le lao lao ha, le pei bu ko si kuan le kana gin na. But I'm very fortunate because my parents, you know, they do take note of what I say also. But it's not because I'm sifu. Because even last time in secondary school, JC or uni, I would sometimes share with them my thoughts. I think there's one key element, which is I spent many hours, many days listening to what they have to say. Yeah, communication is a two-way process. If you don't ever pay attention to what they say, why should they listen to you? You know, nowadays the standard narrative on parent-child relationship is parents, you all should listen to what your child has to say. You must respect their wishes. Must respect them. Respect that. And yet, from the children angle, it's always why do we have to respect elders? This is old thinking. One day I'm thinking, parents have to respect children, but children don't have to respect elders. What kind of idea is this? So recently I told off some parents. I said, I mean not told off, but I just share my thoughts. When you think about it, what have children done? I mean, especially if you are, I say this very openly to all of you, if you are below the age of 20, what have you done for society to be worthy of respect? What have you done to be worthy of people to listen to you? I mean, think about it. Right? We talk about respect, we talk about you know, giving people airtime, listening to people. But sometimes now we are so caught up with adjusting everything to fit in with the child, we have stopped asking ourselves, well, what is the basis? Yeah, what is the basis? Yeah. So I don't say that I'm a model for that. Yeah. But I think one of the critical factors why the communication pattern between myself and my parents is I spend many evenings listening to what my father had to say. I spend many part of my childhood in a day listening to what my mother has to say to me. Yeah, communication is a two-way thing, ma. Just as children always say, you want me to listen to you, but how come you don't listen to me? But do children listen to what their parents had to say to begin with? So, giving of time. Nowadays, we always talk about non-judgmental. Don't judge me, don't judge me. But at the same time, the younger generation shouldn't be judging their parents. Just listen first, ma. You don't have to agree, but at least listen first. Yeah. But beyond listening, just spending that time together. Yeah, because I see a lot of parents, you know, especially between the time where the children finish their studies, starting work. Between starting work and then ultimately settling down is a short 5 to 10 years. Yeah, the short 5 to 10 years where the child is somewhat independent but still dependent on the parent. And then once the child has gotten married, then the child is again caught up with another phase of their life, setting up their own family. So actually, for parents, it's a struggle, you know. Yeah, because it's one phase after another. And before you know it, your child is a parent of their own. And then sometimes people wonder, hey, how come my parents become busybody, you know, want to poke their nose into my how I bring up my child? Well, because they have been involved in your life for 20 over 30 years. You want them to just suddenly, oh, you get married, your problem. Yes, there are some culture that is like that. Yeah. But they are not, no? Then what, how? They are not that kind of culture, ma. While younger generation always say, oh, you must try to understand, why don't we understand our parents also? Yeah. But the narrative currently is always about elders, society, the parents understanding younger generation. Never turn around and ask the younger generation to be more understanding. We should promote that. But I don't say one-sided. Both should try to understand each other. Yeah. So giving. A bit more details into the giving. If you have the privilege of staying with your parents, no matter your age, I usually give this exercise to younger children, yeah, which is on a daily basis to offer a cup of water to your parents. Now I know, maybe your parents are the one who pay for utilities, so you are taking their water and then offering to them. But still, it is a very precious practice. Because you don't know how many more cups you have to offer them. When I decided to ordain, it took a few months. And then finally, I think when everything was settled and I was going to fly to Taiwan for ordination, then later on to US. I seated my parents down and then poured them two cups of water and kneeled down and offered to them to thank them for the their kindness. In the Buddhist tradition, when we ordain, if our parents are present, before we take the final the precepts, we will bow down to our parents. Yeah. To me, it's a very very meaningful practice. Yeah. To acknowledge that their significance, their contribution to your life. So this is a practice that you all can do, especially if you are staying with your parents. If you're not staying with your parents, you are staying by yourself now, at least make it a point once a week. I know maybe sometimes the experience is not the best, and I highlighted in class on Friday, sometimes you want to be filial to your parents, but maybe your parents, you know, 可能八字不合，比较硬, you know your parents like to eat chicken rice or fried rice or whatever, cha kui tiao. Then when you buy, then your parents say, which store? That store not nice. Then you ask, which store nice? Aiyah, your brother know. Oh no, then you, oh no, what is this? Huh? Can you stop talking about brother? But what to do? Do what you can. And so giving is not just about like that, no? Can you give without attachment? Can you give such that the giving do not give rise to defilement in you? Can you still be happy when you give and you get rejected? Like today, I rejected 2 offerings of drinks. I almost never reject anything that's given. But on medical grounds, I rejected them because now I'm having the cough. If I accept and then I drink, then lucky was. But sometimes when you're giving to some people, especially when it's your own parent, then your parent, tua sui sin, the heart one big one small. Then how? It can be very damaging. So if you are on the receiving end as a child and your parent is like that, what to do? Don't spend your life asking, how come like that? How come like that? You look at your hand. I'm not going to talk about finger being long and short. You look at your left and right hand. Are they the same? Yeah. Imagine if you have 2 right hands. Both are like that. So, I am bopian now. But still try. 日久见人心. I know of this family. This housewife, this mother, take care of the mother-in-law. But in the early years, the grandmother, the mother-in-law, like bohiu, no matter how this family try to provide, like dismissive, brush it off, and then because there was, I don't know whether this is prevalent in the younger generation. But in the older generation, sometimes they have this kind of like, it's not just favoritism. It's outright that kind of like, to put it bluntly, look down. You know, like, aiya, what kind of thing you offer? Olai! You know? But this family, the mother, continue to persevere. Although the mother-in-law came on like, pass this remark, pass that remark, then not happy like that. But never mind. Until the later years, all the uncle, I play ping pong, pass the grandmother to this uncle, then pass the uncle. And in the end, all the brothers, all of them decided, I think, sent to home lah. Then that family, the mother, said, no, this is your own mother. No, this is not even my mother, your mother. How can you? It's not that we cannot let her stay. Let her stay. Yeah. Then you know what happened? Stayed. Then ding dong a bit. Then ultimately came back to stay there because everybody do one more. This is a sad state of Singapore culture. Yeah. When families are starting off, oh, want the mother to stay together. Why? Can take care of the kids, ma. Then after taking care of kids, grew up already, don't need the mother, okay, y'all can have her now. If the mother have inheritance, was then towards the end of the life, again fight. In between, nobody want. Yeah, so that in that family, the old lady don't have anything, so nobody want also. Then this family take care, until one day, that old lady told the dead mother, cried, that she has seen her over so many years. The old lady regretful. The mother-in-law said, no, you are our mother. It's only right that we take care. So, yes, sometimes we try to be filial to our parents and so on. Sometimes we are all unenlightened now. We have our own crazy, you know. But don't let that corrupt or taint our wholesomeness. Continue to do what we can. But if you cannot take it, then don't force yourself too much also lah. Otherwise you go crazy while trying to be enlightened. You know? Yeah. Now then the last part is, on the flip side, as we grow up and grow old, sometimes I will tell you this, those who are the parents playing favorites, they are not aware also, you know. They think they are doing the right thing. They are not aware, not always lah, sometimes they are aware lah, outrightly piensing. But some are really just oblivious. So as we learn the Dharma, it's a lot of introspection and self-check. Ask yourself, do we sometimes ignore the plea and the cry of one child over the other child? Have to be careful, no? Because you must never say, no, I'm very fair one. Don't be so sure. If you're not enlightened, there's a high chance you will have favorites. Better to be aware that you do have favorites than to delude yourself thinking that you don't have favorites. Yeah. With that awareness, then perhaps you can be more appreciative when people give things to us. So this is a daily practice you can do. Offer water. How about offering to the Buddha? To begin with, if you have taken refuge, good to have a mini altar at home, or at least have a picture or a photo, you know, positioned somewhere. Some people say, oh, so Sufu, where can I hide it? Walao, so shameful man, Buddha. It's not as though you are the disciple of Adolf Hitler, then don't dare to let people know, you know. Buddha leh. Don't have to hide, ma. Yeah, some students, they move to a new house, then they ask me, Sufu, which corner can I put the Buddha statue? What do you want to put in the corner? But some students ask, so, but is it compulsory? Well, the Buddha didn't set it in any rule. But it's not for the Buddha. It's not that you put there, then the Buddha have many place to stay. Huh? The Buddha don't need it, you know. It's for you. It's for us. So that you have a sanctuary at home. Yeah, a reminder. So every day, so if you have an altar or an image, don't just just put there as a talisman, or put up here, then protect the whole house, then ghosts cannot come in, insects won't come, yeah, robber pass by, then somehow blinded by the Buddha, then won't steal. No, it's a reminder for us. Yeah, so every day, when we do offering, it's not that the Buddha need your cup of water, so miserable, one whole day, drink one small cup, then, you know, twice a month, get some oranges, then whole day hungry. Yeah. It's not that, you know. Yeah, or at night, must switch on the lamp because Buddha is afraid of a dove. Yeah, all these practices is for us. Yeah. All the practice of doing offering is really more for us than anything. Yeah, the practice of offering of, so some basic offerings are offering light, yeah, water, incense, fruits, flowers. Yeah, five basic offerings. But there are some items which maybe, if you do it on a daily basis, I wouldn't say it's a hassle, but for some, maybe logistically difficult. Flowers, for example. Yeah. You have to offer fresh flower every day, then a bit siong. Yeah. Fruits, then every day offer, then after that, who is going to eat all the fruits? Yeah. So, some of these items you can maybe offer once a week or something. But a cup of water, incense, light, these three can be done daily. Yeah. The offering of light. Light represents wisdom, clarity. And as you, it's not that Buddha need your wisdom, but as you light the candle or the lamp, it is a reminder of the teaching that once wisdom arises, it dispels darkness. The presence of wisdom dispels ignorance. That as the Buddha is the bringer of light, 2,500-600 years ago, brought this light of wisdom to this world, has been passed down. We as a disciple, we have received it in no small measure. We shall uphold this wisdom and pass it on where we can. And then when we offer incense, it is a link. In the Buddha's time, people were already offering incense like nobody's business. And it was for really practical reasons. This, you know, purify the air, drive away mosquito, fly. I mean, it has all those practical purposes. In the Catholic Church, yeah, in the ancient times, now it's a ceremony, you know, the altar boy. Yeah, you see almost identical that form in Tibetan tradition. Yeah, Xintang, they walk around. Yeah, in the Chinese tradition, we also do it, but we do it as a ceremony already. In the Tibetan tradition, they still do it, but less of a ceremony because that's really needed because there's a lot of people inside. So to purify the air, because it's usually quite damp. So, but in one sutta, the Buddha explained that in all the different scents that is being offered, today when we offer incense, it's usually lighted. But in the past, some of the scent is not lighted. Yeah, it's basically offered there because the wood, you just put it there, you'll just radiate that, you know, that scent. It's almost like ambipure, you know. Yeah, if the Buddha is born today, yeah, then we'll be offering ambipure. So the Buddha said, in all the different offerings of scent and so on, there are different scent that is being made from the roots of plants, the bark, the leaf, and so on and so forth. Yeah, but of all of them, I think he mentioned about how sandalwood is most supreme. Yeah, but that's worldly scent. Then the Buddha said, there's one that excels that. And that is the scent of a person who is a cultivator. And then the Buddha explained. He don't leave things hanging. He explains for and the sandalwood, while very refined, it can last and spread. It can spread a large distance and last for a while. But the scent of a cultivator, a person of upright morality, the name, his name, his deeds spread far and wide, far beyond that of any worldly scent, and last for generations to come. Yeah. So when you offer incense, it's a reminder that just as the incense purify the air, may you practice and uphold the practices of sila to purify our body and speech, yeah, to form a good foundation to practice the purification of our mind, and ultimately lead to enlightenment. Offering of water in the Theravadan tradition is often just seen as a practice of giving, yeah, of water. Sometimes it's also seen as, purity. Flowers is a direct reference to the teaching on impermanence. To reflect, the flowers are now beautiful, blossoming, but over the days, it wither and fade. Just as this is such, likewise this body. So it's not something superstitious, it's not something that is mystical. It's a very direct teaching. But so that's why in some temples you'll see that the flowers are not replaced so soon. Because if you replace every day, then you cannot see the impermanence of everyday fresh flowers. They're supposed to be there as a reminder, so you must see it vidama. Must see it be that. No. So, depending on which tradition, so the Chinese Mahayana tradition tend to do that. The moment is wither, you remove it. Why? Because the focus is moving away from impermanence, but to 庄严道场. Then the aim is a bit different. But the intent is still good. It's not that they have bad intent, but it's the focus. Yeah. If you ask me, I would prefer the former. Yeah. Leave it there. Because the Buddha don't mind the flower withering. That's precisely what the Buddha taught. Yeah. It's we who mind. Why? So it depends. The next day when you drink the water, depend on whether you just drink directly from the cup. Yeah, usually people will take the water and pour it into the common flask, lah. Yeah. So this is the traditional Chinese concept. Ping an, ping an, jia, jia bo bi. Bo bi. You can, don't have to throw away, lah. Water plants, or you can also drink, lah. It's water, ma. But of course, if you see ants inside, don't drink with the ants, lah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so sometimes when you do one offering, then you create one problem, got ants, then you must put a cover. But then you put cover, then you think, oh, but I could put cover, then Buddha, how does Buddha drink? So then when you're doing prayer, you take it out, then you do offering, then after you check, then... Huh? Can lah. What is the cup? Not
I thought
chanting,
I just
cover. Can cover. Right. Not, No. So there's a difference between can cover versus should cover or must cover or cannot cover. Many times it's just a matter of what is practical. In Buddhism, a lot of things can always be traced back to some practical consideration. Yeah. Don't make it into a ritual. Or, you know, like, imagine, you have children? Imagine your children see you do this every time. And then later on, at some point, you tell your children, Mommy, I'm going to be gone soon. You all must take over me. We all have been... You pai guan yin or pai fu zhong? Pai guan. Then you tell your children, Sijia Moni Fo have been drinking water with us for so many years. You all cannot stop. Otherwise, Sijia Moni Fo no water to drink. So, I tell you, before that, you must offer water. But then you must open the cup. Then you must let Buddha drink. When we finish chanting, you recover. Okay? Then, the trouble is, when we pass down steps like this... Let me finish the story first. Because many people have been passing these kind of things down. Then the children, either they religiously follow, or they just do bohui and dismiss it as superstition. Then the trouble is, I'm not so concerned about those who don't do it. No. I'm concerned with those who do it religiously. Taking it as a ritual that die, you must do exactly those steps without knowing why those steps. Then it really becomes a ritual and then become a superstition. That Buddha must drink water at that hour, then you must open the cup, then drink, finish, with it or not. Then after you pass away, right, one day their children ask, but, Lopa, how do we know whether Buddha has finished drinking or not? Then they, then they go and ask us, but they will ask everybody except Sifu. Then somebody will say, how to ask? Sing Pui lo. Yeah, then you have more and more rituals coming out. Pop Pui. Finish drinking, haven't finished. Yeah, then one day, your great-grandson late for work. Then when arrive at work, then the boss, why are you late? Today, train never break down. What? Why? Because I popue, Buddha haven't finished drinking. Amitofo. So, I hope you all have enough to do. So, today's session, I have listed out a lot of different things you can do in terms of giving. Not just one type of giving, many different ways, and something that you can do immediately every day. So, think about how you can do all these practices. But most importantly, give with love, give with compassion, give with kindness, guided by wisdom. No time for... What is your question? Fruits. Fruits, typically, as a reminder of the fruit of cultivation. This is what I heard. But in the Buddha's time, when fruits were offered, was really for Buddha and the monks to eat. Water in the Buddha's time was really offered for Buddha to drink also. Not just put down there and then let him stare at it. And in the Buddha, when you offer Sifu, right, Sifu will open the cup and then drink. Open the cover. Sifu will not like that. Cannot drink. From what I can remember, the offering of fruits, some of these are how we infuse Dharma into a practice that was already present. Because in the Buddha's time, food and drinks were offered as a direct support of the Buddha and the monks and nuns' physical well-being. But now Buddha already entered Parinibbana. So why are we still doing offering? Actually, it's manifold. Tissue? Okay. Okay, turn green already. Okay, turn green is a bit heaty. So those who wanted to offer me the cooling drinks can offer already. Some of you may be thinking, "Walao, Sifu, sao ka ni kwan ko bi gong." So, the practice of giving just one last part. When we do offering to the Buddha, whether with or without those thoughts, even includes when we are having our meal to do offering. Those who had meals with me, you will know, I will always insist we do the offering beforehand, before we partake in the meal. Yeah, and it is to cultivate this mindset. For one, to plant the seed of affinity with the triple gem. Yeah. When we do offering, it's not that the Buddha really have to, wow, so desperate, I have to wait for your food. But it's to cultivate this seed. But even beyond that, it is to make it a point that whatever we receive, and this is part of bodhisattva practices, that whatever you receive, even the smallest gift, a cup of water, you are ready to offer it to the triple gem, to all sentient beings. Yeah, and not claim it as, wow, this is mine, no one can take it. Oh. So, if you can do all these practices, wow, your mind, is like a very fertile ground, you know. Very soft, very supple. Yeah, very warm. Not the zhua, but, you know, very tender, very loving, very kind. And when people come near, they feel that kindness. Yeah. Most importantly, with that, whatever practice you do, wow, very effective. If the mind is very closed, you put up a lot of hard to practice. Subsequent practices, you'll meet some obstacles. Okay. Explain fearless. Check dictionary. Fearless is just an English word, not a technical term. Yeah, but I explained earlier, fearlessness, passive and active. Actively, you go and give protection to people. Yeah. Passively, you don't harm people. Yeah. Is it okay? You must really stop already. Already exceeded time. 愿消三障诸烦恼 愿得智慧真明了 普愿罪障悉消除 世世常行菩萨道 阿弥陀佛 起立。